this photograph was taken a few years ago. They have now moved, that those same four pairs are there, but they have now moved some considerable distance further apart. How do we find honey buzzards? Well, we've got to get out and we've got to put a lot of time in good viewpoints, looking over vast areas if we're going to locate honeys. You've got to be out, I would say, the second and third week of May. If you go the first week of May, there's a chance they haven't arrived. If you go the last week of May, many honey buzzards are actually sitting on eggs by the last week of May. And anybody that's done any work with honey buzzards knows that once they start incubating, they don't fly in and out of the woods, they dig tunnels and walk out. So you've got to spend a lot of time at that pre-week period. And of course, the weather isn't always suitable. You can see, you know, in the northwest of Britain, you've got to dress in barber jackets as well as boots and the lot. You can't walk around like they can in the south in smoking jackets and carpet. It's a long, difficult job. You've got to be able to identify honey buzzards over big distances. I think one of the problems with the survey is that there aren't enough people, maybe, perhaps I'm not doing people justice, but maybe there's not enough people who can identify honey buzzards over big distances so that you can survey them well. If you can't identify a honey buzzard at a mile and a half, 2 miles away from common buzzards, it's difficult to survey areas. You know, you're only covering such small, tiny samples. And I think that's one of the major problems when it comes to actually establishing if you've got honey buzzard in an area. You need to be up at that crucial 2 weeks, and you need to be able to identify them a long way off. You're going to be real lucky if one flies by you and you can identify it, you know, through plumage or anything like that. Incidentally, this is not a honey buzzard, this is a common buzzard, just in case. They spend a lot of time loafing about in the woods. That's another reason that you don't see them. And colours don't help you. They come in all colours. I mean, I haven't seen one like this in the book. This is a bird in Wales that's been nesting for several years. The purple male, we call him, and you can see why. I mean, it's the most unusual plum colour. A beautiful bird, absolutely beautiful bird. But if you're trying to identify honey buzzards from plumage, you're missing the point, because you get them that colour, you'll get like this female, an intermediate, you can get like this next in Shropshire, an all white bird underneath. And they've got every sort of colour in between. So trying to identify them from plumage, I think, is a loser to begin with. If you're going to go down that road, then you're again very, very limited. You need to be able to identify honey buzzards, you know, from their structure. Every book you pick up will tell you honey buzzards got 3 bars on the tail. And I can imagine loads and loads of birds going around looking for 3 bars on the tail. Now, that's a good honey. That's a good honey, and he's close. You know, if that flew by you, you know, flew by you, you'd think you were lucky. And yet you don't see 3 bars on the tail. It's just lighting. If you look at that one, it's a good honey. You can't see the bars on the tail. I've just used it. If you start looking for plumage details or start thinking you have to see plumage details to identify honeys, you're going to miss the point. The thing with it is you've got to identify honeys from their shape and structure. There are other things. Most people, when they mention, you see descriptions of honey buzzards, they'll say about carpal patches, they'll say about the length of the tail, they'll say about the three bars. All of them are right. But experienced honey buzzard watchers, they'll tell you it's the little subtleties you've got to look for. This is skinny. I never read anybody mention how skinny they are. Over a long distance, they're such a thin little bird. They're like the difference between a hobby and a kestrel. They're skinny. They're stable when they come up. If you're looking at common buzzards all day, which is what we do, hundreds of them, we live in a common buzzard population, which is through the roof. And you're just trying to pick out honeys from amongst them. Straight away, as the honey comes up, he's stable. He might be 2 miles away, but he's coming up rock steady. Whereas your common is rocking about, you know they're like in the air. And it's little things like that. Obviously the length of the tail is important. Anybody got anything to say about this? Anybody got anything to say about this?
The common.
It's common, yes, good. And Peter said that's the common. And to show you, you can't really see much plumage on that. You can see a bit, like you say, but you wouldn't be spoiling yourself about plumage. But if we look at this bird, the difference is noticeable immediately without seeing any markings on it. If I just go back to that one, and it's definitely in the same sort of posture, do I have to say more? You know, the difference in the structure of those birds, forget plumage. If somebody starts describing plumage to you, stop listening. You need to be looking, somebody needs to be telling you about the shape of the bird. Obviously the tail is important. The one characteristic that does stick out is the tail. And you know there's this is a typical honey, that long full tail. That's important. When I say full, it's always bulging a bit, the honey buzzard tail, a little notch in the end, as you know. Can't always see it a long way off, but you know, you can certainly see that the bird's got enough tail a long way off. I know there's been apparently some discourse recently on the internet concerning identifying honey buzzards. It's quite enlightening to see how much how difficult people find it. A lot of people were arguing about was something honey buzzard, wasn't something honey buzzard. It just served to illustrate how awkward these birds can be to the uninitiated. And really there is no substitute for spending time in the field, I suppose, with people who know what they're looking at. And that is the best way to get experience with honeys. If you're going to survey for them over large areas, which is what I think most of us want to do. I stick this slide in. Yes, it has got bars on the tail, and if you've got that close, I don't think you need to worry about looking for the bars on the tail, but yes, I put it in there, it has got bars on the tail, but as this illustration shows, we've got two. just a little tester then. What's the bird on the left? Anybody want a little guess? What's the bird? I know this is putting people on the spot, maybe no one likes to shout out. What's the bird on the left? You're going to speak up or you're just going to mess with it?
They're both honeys.
And not particularly good ones either, but they're both honeys. There are other ways to locate honeys. There are physical signs. Dugout wasp nest is an obvious one. So if you, particularly in woodland areas, if you find wasp nest dugout, you know, it's always worth looking around. Obviously it could be a badger. What I always say is that if you find a wasp nest dugout on a woodland ride or something, have a look around the surrounding vegetation on the lower branches of nearby trees. And if honeys have been at work, invariably you'll find bits of a carton, bits of paper, honey, wasp paper, scattered off the ground. And unless you've got some very peculiar badgers up in the north of England, it's highly likely you've been honey buzzing and have done that job. So in the woodland,